This BBC podcast is supported by ads outside the UK.
I'm Natalia Melman Petrozella, and from the BBC, this is Extreme, Peak Danger.
The most beautiful mountain in the world.
If you die on the mountain, you stay on the mountain.
This is the story of what happened when 11 climbers died on one of the world's deadliest mountains, K2. And of the risks we'll take to feel truly alive.
If I tell all the details, you won't believe it anymore.
Extreme, Peak Danger. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.
Oh, come. Jetzt bitte die richtige. Oh, nein, oh nein. Doch, ja, ja.
Was ist denn mit dir los?
Ich glaube, die fühlt sich lotto.
Vorfreude, Nervenkitzel, Glücksmomente. Das fühlst du mit Lotto Bayern. Lotto Bayern, nimm dein Glück in die Hand. In jeder Lottoannahmestelle und auf lottobayern.de.
Spielteilnahme ab 18. Glücksspiel kann süchtig machen. Hilfe unter bzga.de.
Lotto Bayern wünscht viel Spaß mit folgendem Podcast.
Welcome to the documentary In the Studio from the BBC World Service. In this edition, there's another chance to hear our award-winning programme about legendary filmmaker Ken Loach, who directed classics like Kes, Kathy Come Home and I, Daniel Blake.
And there's a poem by Brecht that I kind of quoted before. I always thought the simplest of words must suffice. When I say what things are like, it'll break the hearts of all. That you go down if you don't fight is surely clear to you. Simplest of words, like the simplest of shots, but there's got to be a steel underneath it, you know.
Which was produced by me, Stephen Hughes, and presenter Sharuna Saga.
I'm speaking to you from the Cannes Film Festival, where Ken Loach's new film, The Old Oak, is getting its world premiere. I'm stood by the red carpet waiting for the acclaimed British director, his cast and collaborators to walk past and enter the screening. Ken is one of only 9 directors to have won Cannes top prize, the Palme d'Or, twice. Once in 2006 for The Wind That Shakes the Barley, and then a decade later for I, Daniel Blake, which was the first of 3 films he made in succession in the northeast of England.
Spiritual home this pub has been over the years. It represents something that
I've been given exclusive access to the veteran filmmaker as he directs The Old Oak, the final film in the trilogy, and by his own admission, the last feature film he's ever likely to make.
I think a film like this would be tricky to do again, just because certain facilities fail a bit.
I've been following the production for 18 months, and it all began on a crisp January day in 2022 when I met Ken in a defunct public house.
I'm stood outside a red brick pub on the main road going through Merton, which is a former colliery village in East Durham. This is the focal point of Ken Loach's brand new film. Now, I don't even know the name of it yet because it's all been very hush-hush, but I've been invited here this afternoon to a pre-production meeting with Ken Loach, some of his team, and the lead actor. So maybe today's the day I get to find out what the film is about and what it's called.
As I walk inside, what really strikes me is the sheer size of the place. It's enormous and it's empty. The first person I meet is the film's producer, Rebecca O'Brien.
This is going to be the main location for our film, The Old Oak, and the pub is called The Old Oak in the film.
So the name of the film is The Old Oak?
It is, really.
That didn't take long to find out, did it?
Not really.
Well, that's one mystery solved. I venture further in to find Ken Loach at the bar.
Hello, Shimon.
It's good to see you again.
Yes, good to see you again.
So what can you tell me about the film at this point? What's it about?
It's about a pub, whether it will survive or not. It's in a village. We don't name the village, but it'll be a composite of 3 or 4 villages. And into the village, a group of Syrian families. And it's how the two communities live together. And there's a story comes out of that, which no one knows yet who's in the film.
It was worth a try. I then asked Ken why they'd chosen this particular pub.
We've been looking for some time, and we've lighted on this one at the end of last year. And it's a handsome pub, but been empty for 3 years. Today we've been walking around it and deciding how we'll regenerate it. The landlord of the pub, TJ in the film, and Dave Turner, who's going to be TJ, is here to see the pub in its state, present state, and talk about how we're going to bring it back. And Dave actually worked in the pub for some time, so he knows more about it than I do.
This is Dave's first look around, and he immediately notices that there's something vital missing. Beer. The real-life pub landlord, Gareth, cut off the supply when he closed the premises.
Because there's the lines coming from the cellar up here. That's with it being cleaned. I think he said the beer should be taken out. Because I don't know what, in reality, you're going to want to be serving. Because you're serving real beer, because by the end of the day, you could have quite a jolly crew.
Together with Gareth and the production designer, Fergus Clegg, they discuss what changes they're going to make in order to turn the real pub, the Victoria, into the fictional one, the Old Oak.
So if we were to extend the bar, because obviously we'd want to keep the entrance, even though it wouldn't be the arch, we'll keep the entrance there.
It's really just extending the bar back, just to put something on that empty wall there, reflect.
The bedroom is across the way, but there are no bedroom scenes, Dave. I'm sorry to disappoint you.
Can't get my head down anymore.
No, you're awake for the whole film.
And it's here that Ken tells Dave about his character's backstory and how he came to own a pub.
Your dad was killed in a pit accident, and your mum, with the compensation, bought the pub.
Right.
And you inherited it.
Right. So I've seen it go from, like, the centre of the village to being on its knees, basically.
Yes, that's it.
Well, I've got an old book shows you the pits that were in Corrie Durham and Northumberland from the 40s to the 50s, and they're each a red dot, and you see them just over the decades just decline until there's none. Every little dot was a community.
Yeah.
It was a village with a heart and soul, and one by one, they've lost that, and some of them were just actually bulldozed, the villages, so those whole communities were just kicked out.
Yeah.
This tells the tale of Corrie Durham and the North East in general, really.
It's a tale to tell.
Yes.
As I follow Dave and Ken around, listening to them discuss the film, it's clear that Dave has a deep understanding of the background in which the film is set. But apart from a couple of very small appearances in I, Daniel Blake and Sorry We Missed You, he has no real acting experience. And he's the latest in a long line of non-professional actors who've starred in Ken Loach's films, including David Bradley in Cares, Martin Compston in Sweet 16, and Dave Johns in I, Daniel Blake. Ken tells me why he prefers to cast so-called real people in his movies.
A film camera can actually see who you are. Inevitably, whether you want to or not, you do a documentary about the person you're filming. You can see their social class, you see how they walk, how they move, how they hold a knife and fork, how they speak, of course. And so you see all that. You see the texture of skin, you know, if someone's on a bad diet, you see it. So if you're going to try and make a film that is authentic, then you have to find people that can withstand that scrutiny. And that means finding people with something in common with the part they're going to play. Dave's a barman and also worked in the FBU and presents himself, has to be articulate. And we wanted someone who was articulate but who understood the political disillusion of the character, and he certainly does that. All those elements. And you can't fake that on film.
Nevertheless, to go from a 30-year career in the fire service to be the male lead in a major film displays an extraordinary leap of faith on both sides. So I asked Dave how he got the part.
I was going along for auditions and not even realising there were auditions. I thought I was just going for a chat. Because the way Ken works, you're so relaxed and comfortable, you don't realise that you're actually auditioning. And when I realised it was an audition, I walked out and I had to go straight across the Centurion pub at the Central Station and just sit and had a pint and just compose myself for 20 minutes because I was so... I was just absolutely exhausted and worn out, and it was because what he'd asked us to do and what had happened, and it was... I joked to him saying that every time I've done one of these sessions with him, it's like therapy. He calls himself Dr. Loach. You walk out afterwards and you think, I've got no idea where that came from. No idea. I mean, at one point, I'm not going to say I was crying, but I had tears in my eyes. I got that emotional about this one scenario. Part of the impact was that my daughter was becoming ill because of my behaviour. I've got just a hint of a suggestion of what my character's going to be. I've got no idea where the story's going to go.
You know he has a dog, though.
Yes, I own a dog, yes. The dog's my best mate. Once they identify the specific dog, I've got to bond with the dog. That's going to be an interesting one because, you know, I have a dog at home.
It's a shame you couldn't use your own dog.
No, my dog is not... he's a little old man and he's grumpy.
He's a chihuahua, right?
Yes. Thank you for mentioning that. I do prefer Mexican fighting hound. So I have my own dog, but I'm going to have a new mate for this one.
Dave even has a say in which dog will get the part as his best friend, as he'll be getting to know the pooch for a few weeks before the production starts.
Operation Dog.
Yeah.
Together with Ken, he looks through a portfolio of hopefuls, and I did wonder if this was a job for a tripod dog that's become a recurring motif in Ken's movies.
Has it got three legs?
No. Well, at the moment, it's got... It's
I know you like to have a three-legged dog in every film.
Well, it wasn't this...
That's only a rumour.
No, I think the dog with three legs would be a minor role, whereas this is a leading role.
Well, that's got character.
Yes. Actually, that is quite a good one, isn't it? What does it say about him? Is that...
Oh, he's been in the railway, children.
Oh, well,
he's a veteran.
Well.
Might cost too much, Ken.
Yeah, he'll make a fuss about the food, won't he? Yeah, we really want a trailer.
Well, that's a face, I've got to say.
Yeah, let's put a tick on that one then, shall we? As well.
I like the look of that one, Bella. In my opinion, obviously... Yeah, yeah. What you think, you know?
No, it's. I mean, in a way, it's your decision of the three.
It's essential for Ken that the dog and Dave forge a close connection before the cameras start rolling. But casting the canine is only one of the many things that need to get done before shooting begins in just under 8 weeks' time. Rebecca tells me what else is on her to-do list.
Now, at the moment, I'm in the process of raising the money. I think I've more or less got the money in place, although it's slightly less than I had hoped for, so we've got to cut a few corners and work out how we can alter things to fit the budget. Then during the shoot, one of the things that I will be doing, apart from looking at things daily with Ken and working out if there are any problems and troubleshooting, really, that becomes my job later.
I was curious to hear you just say then that you haven't got all the money that you wanted, because... Ken's credentials are phenomenal.
Yeah, but these are difficult times for the independent film sector in our country. I mean, Hollywood, of course, has lots of money, but we like to keep control of our own product. We're making films that we want to ourselves. So we're not using famous actors to sell the film. We're selling the film on ourselves. There's a limit to how much funding I can get.
Even if it's for Ken Loach?
Yeah, absolutely. And our best funders are really in France, I have to say. I mean, the French love our films, and they do well there. So we tend to get a bit more out of France than we do out of here.
You're right at the beginning of your journey now, yeah. Aren't you? So the next few months are going to be really full on. We will see you at the rehearsals, I think.
You will, absolutely.
Yeah, see you next time. Okay, right, take care of this young man.
Yum. Right, cheers, Ken.
This is the documentary In the Studio from the BBC World Service. I'm Sharuna Sagar, and I've been following the production of Ken Loach's new film, The Old Oak. It's now 2 months since my last visit to East Durham, and this time I've come to the village of Hawarden to attend one of the three community meetings set up by the production crew to meet local people and maybe sign up some supporting actors.
That's also a good form. You can put in as much information as you can. There's a little bit there about yourselves. Where you're from as well also is really helpful, because we will be in certain streets that may be ideal, maybe, for whereabouts you're from.
It's an impressive turnout at the Social Welfare Centre, and there's a palpable sense of excitement in the air.
Thank you so much. My name's Mark. I'm the location manager on the film. As I mentioned, the film's called The Old Oak. It is... being directed by Ken Loach. Has anyone ever heard of Ken?
Yes.
That's good. Great news. In that case, then, you'll know a lot of what Ken's work.
These events are very important because they reassure the residents, they let them know what's going on, and encourage them to be part of the process.
So how hopeful are you you're going to get in Ken Loach's film?
Very.
I'm a Horden girl, I'm an ex-miner, and I'm an actress, so I'm perfect.
I've worked as an extra for like 8 to 10 years now, and they're not really hiring northern-based actors for these shows. So to have something that's actually on my streets and you're hiring colliery people, for me, that's just a no-brainer. I was at a run.
But while there's no shortage of people wanting to be in the film, the big problem for Rebecca right now is that one of her stars, Ebla, is not here with them.
We're 4 weeks away from shooting the film. Main issue at the moment is that our leading actress, who comes from the Golan Heights, we need to get her a work permit. Because of Ukraine, they've stopped allowing people to pay for a priority work permit. Now, that means that it will take at least 3 weeks for her work permit to come through. And that's a bit scary. So these are the sort of things that happen. But if she doesn't get here in time, we have to push the whole shoot back, because obviously we need her.
It's 5 weeks later, May the 11th, 2022, when I meet up with Rebecca again.
Hey, Sharuna.
Hello.
Nice to see you.
And you.
Come on into the pub.
It's changed so much since I was
last
here.
The regulars are already here. They're rehearsing and they're doing the crossword.
Curved paths of celestial bodies of spacecraft. Six letters. Obviously.
Orbit.
So we're pretty cool.
It's a good job we're not doing a film about University Challenge.
Just quickly, going round everyone here, Tommy is clearly a retired man, paler version of what you did in real life. A bit of entertaining alongside a job, which has given you a bit of a nest egg in addition to the pension, but not a lot really. Pop in as, you know, 3 or 4 times a week, I would think.
And do you remember Laura, who was here?
Aye.
You're playing the character Laura, so you'd know Laura well too. I think she'd get you into be doing things and volunteering for the odd jobs.
That's Paul Laverty telling the cast about their characters. It's extremely unusual for a scriptwriter to be on set and also giving direction. But that just goes to show how much Ken Loach believes in collaboration. Paul and Ken have been working this way for decades.
We were doing a film called Raining Stones, I think, in Manchester, and I got a letter from Paul saying he'd been in Nicaragua working as a human rights lawyer, observing the conflict. He'd been there, he'd observed it, and he'd written a script, and wondered if we could work together. And then we made a film called Carla's Song.
Tell me about your shared vision, because you share a love of football, you share same attitude, same perspective. So tell me a bit about that.
Well, I guess it starts with a view of the world, really, which is that society is based on an irreconcilable conflict between those who own and control what we used to call the ruling class and those who sell their labour, the working class. And they have conflicting interests. It's how that conflict plays out that is important. If you show it, you explain the inner conflict, and also to see the possibility of hope, the possibility that this is not a permanent
condition, it's a feature of our society now. It's a stage. If humankind survives, it will progress.
So how does your dynamic work with Paul? Is he thinking about the next film while you are actually finishing a film, or how does it work?
Well, it worked like that for about 30 years. I mean, we were preparing one and finishing another. Time's running out now a bit, so I might be in the stands rather than on the pitch next time.
Well, Ken will be 87 by the time this film is officially released, but seeing it firsthand how passionate he still is about storytelling and getting as close to the truth as possible, it's hard to imagine him stopping.
If that side has a game of darts and this side stays here, what we'll do is we'll work out everyone's situation, whether you're early...
This is the first time cast members have come together to get a sense of where their characters are coming from.
Vic, we'd had a thought about Vic, hadn't we?
Yes, I have.
Do you know what it was?
Yes. We imagined that he maybe worked in security, you know, in several warehouses nearby, so you kind of just...
Charlie doesn't work now, he's a full-time carer. More or less.
Yes, more or less.
I don't think you have to be with her all the time, but I mean that takes up, you know. Yeah. She's in a wheelchair, so she needs help and support. Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But it's not like you can't leave the house, for example. It's not like that.
And I would think you do jobs as and when you can.
Okay.
Because there's a pride to Charlie, I think. So yes, you've done jobs.
After those notes, the cast are asked to improvise a scenario that Ken and Paul have come up with.
Very good. So we've got 10 minutes and there's something cropped up from the community centre. I've got hiccups. What they've got going is a plaque to commemorate an event. I mean, it's a fictional event, but let's imagine it. A fictional event in the centre of the village, a big meeting called by the NUM, joined the strike. Police were there. There was a fight. The devil people were injured, badly injured. And one lad has been in a wheelchair the rest of his life. There's a plaque to commemorate it. You think it's a good idea. The conversation begins with you saying, look, this is the plan. Will you all support it? We're going to have a whip round. There'll be events. Will you come? I think you find it very ill-judged, really. There would have been no violence if there'd been no abuse. And also, why are we commemorating a defeat? Right, off you go then, Joe.
No lot.
It's the moment of truth as the actors are put to the test to perform the scene without a script.
Their sacrifice, you're just going to bin. You didn't want to remember that.
We're lost, man. We're lost.
We're the ones.
Lost. Yeah, we did.
Do you want to commemorate loss?
I think what Joe's trying to say is no. We have the living memory of these events now.
Tears between my legs.
If we don't put a plaque up now to remember it, the kids in 20 years who don't have a living memory of it, it'll be gone.
There you are. Okay, very good. There's a script for the week, waiting back at base. We do the script, of course, but we'll weave in odd little bits around it. So it's not all improvised like this. And the big question, will the pub survive and will it still represent the village? Some people will do quite tough things to sustain it. So we'll see how it unfolds. Anyway, thanks for coming.
Well, that was really fascinating to watch because it felt so real. It didn't look like anyone was actually acting. Exertion's over. It's now time for a well-earned tea break. But before he can get a cuppa and a slice of cake, I ask Ken why he wanted the cast to act out that disagreement.
So we do these little conversations and arguments so they define their relationship to each other so that when the film starts, they've got a memory of these arguments and conflicts and they know where each other comes from.
So this improvisation doesn't actually appear in the film?
No, it's not in the film. It's just an argument. They imagine the argument they might have had before it began.
OK, I'll let you go now to get your tea and cake.
OK, very good. All right, Shuey.
Thank you so much.
The locals are only half the cast, though, because The Old Oak is also the story of the Syrian refugees who now live in County Durham. And so, with 5 days before filming begins, almost everyone connected to the film gathers at the Glebe Community Centre in Merton. Paul Laverty tells me why this is such a significant point in the process.
You know, a script is nothing until it's given flesh and blood. But today is a very special day because we're bringing all the crew together, who are magnificent, many, many old friends. And now we just need, you know, some good luck and a lot of hard work. You know, everybody's coming together. All the Syrian people we've met, many kind of volunteers and activists who've given us good advice along the way.
I mean, it's already been a roller coaster, and you haven't even started the actual filming yet.
Yes, well, there'll be a few more ups and downs before we're finished, I'm sure. So I don't want to tempt fate, but glad to be living the process day by day.
Fortunately, fate is now on their side. Ebla is in the country after a long and frustrating delay.
In the end, we had to put the shoot back by 2 weeks. Cost us a lot of money, but we thought it's better to take the risk and push the shoot in the hope that she would get the visa. Ebla is here. She got here last week, and I can introduce you to Ebla Murray, who's our leading lady. This is Sharuna.
Hi, Sharuna,
BBC.
How are you?
Hello. It's been a hairy few weeks for the team here. Yeah. How's it been for you?
So me too. I was very nervous for my visa to come. I waited without knowing if it will be accepted or not. So, but eventually it did. But we waited about 1 month or more than that.
So she had to go to have what's called a biometric meeting.
Yeah.
And then after that, that's when the clock starts ticking.
Yeah.
But we didn't know how long the clock was going to tick for.
Yeah.
And they said, well, it will be 15 working days, and that was over the Easter holidays or the bank holidays.
So it's been a very few anxious weeks for you, Rebecca, and you.
Yes.
Well, I will see you next time. Okay. Good luck.
Thank you.
I'm so glad you got here.
Thank you so much.
And now, with the arrival of Ebla, the 6 week shooting schedule can start at last.
I was on the phone with her, working through contractions.
For CBC and the BBC World Service, The Con, Caitlin's baby.
Something was off.
There was somebody out there who's faking pregnancies.
There had been other victims scammed by the same person.
We don't want any other doulas to go through this.
The Con, Caitlin's baby. Available now.
It's been nearly 5 weeks since I was in Merton, and I can say the road is as busy as ever, but I'm in front of the Old Oak now, as it's called. And even one of the letters, the K, is artfully hanging off the top just to give it that authentic, derelict kind of look. Walking through, and the place is absolutely full of stuff. Amongst the pub chairs and the tables, there's equipment, there's wires. And I'm walking through to the bar now, and well, the bar's now looking like a functioning bar. It wasn't the last time I was here.
Standing at the bar is Paul Laverty, the writer of The Old Oak, and Ken Loach's long-time collaborator.
You've arrived today in a very, very important scene. And in a way, this is at the heart of our story. And here we are in the wonderful Old Oak, which is not only the last pub in the village, but it's actually the last public space. The libraries closed down, even the local schools closed down. Some of the old-timers and the people who have come here all their lives, they feel this is the last place where they can actually think and talk, and so it's very much wrapped up in their own identity. And of course, what we have is a Syrian community, another traumatised community, have been sent to, you know, some very tough areas, and it's split the community. There are people who welcome them, and there are people who feel that they just can't cope with any new burdens, you know, in the services. So I suppose it all comes to fruition here in the Old Oak. where a group of the community have said, come and eat with us. And very much inspired by what happened during the miners' strike is the key idea that if people eat together, they stick together, they look after each other, and it's an invitation to stand in someone else's shoes to try and understand each other.
I realise that I've been trusted with privileged information about the scene because it's more than the cast know at this point. Ken Loach famously doesn't reveal too much to his actors about what's going to happen from one moment to the next. This is because he wants to capture their honest reactions to certain situations.
He just gives them the script as it unfolds. If they've got a lot to say, then give it to them in plenty of time so they're not worried about, can I learn this, can I learn that? And if there's a surprise, yeah, you spring it.
Sometimes you don't even know what's going to happen after lunch. There's been a couple of times where I haven't even been sure what's going to happen in the next half hour.
Dave has no acting experience, so this role has been one of the greatest challenges of his life.
Some really difficult moments, yeah. But because of the way he deals with you, it somehow gets done. I don't know how. I've tried to think about how it's happened, what's happened, and I can't explain it, and I never will be able to, but there's certainly things happened during filming which I'm still amazed at, and I don't know how he's managed to do what he's done.
He's managed to get you to reach those emotions and portray them on screen. Is that what you mean?
Oh, yeah. I mean, last week was unbelievably difficult days.
Something happened that obviously we can't talk about.
Yeah, it's a Ken Loach film. There's going to be dramas and there's ups and downs. And my character's had a series of downs. And last week he had a particularly bad down. And it was incredibly emotional. It was incredibly difficult. Didn't prepare for it because I didn't know it was going to happen. But that's the way that he likes to work. And he wants the instinctive reaction that he gets. As I say, it's an incredible experience. I've got to try and enjoy every minute of it that's left, and I don't let the great man down. Speaking of which...
There he is over there.
Yeah, yeah.
Is it your time now?
I don't know. That's what I mean. I don't know. I don't think so.
When the pressure's on, people do respond, and it generates an energy and a creativity and a focus that you wouldn't get if you had 2 days to shoot it. You've got to suggest what people might do if they were in that situation. And they have to say, I would do it this way, and that has to work. The moment you say, do it this way, it becomes mechanical.
A lot of moments, I was me as Ibla. So, yeah, it is so personal.
The film's female lead is Ebla Murray, who plays Yara, a young Syrian refugee. Her character is a keen amateur photographer who makes sense of the world through her lens.
I feel like her story is different from my story. So the story of her being a refugee and losing her home, losing her father, this is not my story. In the bigger picture, it's also the story of me being not allowed to go to my home, which is Syria, because I'm from the Golan Heights. It's occupied by Israel. Maybe it's the same feeling of loss I can share with her. Not feeling at home even when you are at home, so maybe that.
Many of the supporting cast, though, are actual refugees from the civil war in Syria and have been forced to flee their homes, like Hasna Hassoun, who I meet on set. She lost her young family and 2 of her limbs in an explosion.
When we were in the street, Shelly came, killed my kids and my husband, and I lost my legs. I stayed in hospital 6 months. My son was 3 years and 2 months. Can't hurt anyone. Or my daughter was 1 year and 1 month. Children. But I think so, my children now in the heaven.
The United Nations brought Hasna to Durham with her 2 sisters. One of them, Rabia, tells me about resettling in the UK.
Took like around 2 years to be here, between like interviews, medical appointments and cultural trainings, because we had like 2 cultural training before we came. And then they said, you are going to England.
Can I ask you about being in this film?
Yeah, sure.
Just tell me, what's it been like for you
Well, it's the real story of most of the Syrian families, to be honest. So it's how we face like some good people in the area we live here in Durham and bad people, how we integrate in the community as well. So everything is similar to our life here, what we've done through these 6 years.
Everyone seems happy and relaxed. You wouldn't know that we were still in the midst of a pandemic. But as I walk back onto set, Paul Laverty has some bad news.
I think we're playing COVID roulette, unfortunately. Last week we lost a couple of the crew members, and today, unfortunately, we lost an actor who's been a regular in the bar of the Old Oak. He was supposed to be doing a key scene on Monday, so we're going to have to rewrite the scene, and we'll just have to find an excuse why one of the regulars in the bar is no longer here. And so we'll need a rub of the green to get through this safely, I hope, because it would be a disaster if one of the main actors, you know, Yara or TJ or someone like that, got it, because it'd be very unfortunate, to say the least.
So I leave Paul to pen some new script lines explaining the absence of one of the characters. Filming's now about to begin in the back room.
We're going to do one from here, and then we shall look at it from over there. Over to you, Yara.
Okay. So we come here at the back room of the bar.
While they get ready for a take, I stay in the main bar area with some of the crew.
It's actually quite a good spot here to people watch, because there's crews wandering up and down with all kinds of things hanging off their belts. You name it, they've got it here to deal with any eventuality that might happen on a film set.
And it's here I spot Jonathan Morris, who's been working with Ken for more than 40 years.
I usually edit Ken's films, pretty much most of them since 1980, which is a long time. So, yeah, and I make an occasional visit on most of the films to have a little chat, meet the crew, just so that people can ask a little bit about what I think of things, because I'm the one watching the rushes, generally. It's a chance to touch base and to plan for the edit, I suppose, as well, which is getting nearer.
And when does the editing process start?
Well, Ken's going to have a little break after filming, and filming doesn't actually end until July the 9th, and Ken will come in the cutting room. We'll start working August the 1st.
And how long is that process?
Around about 15 weeks. And then sound editor starts, the composer, George Fenton, starts, who's here, by the way, as well. There he is. And there's George Fenton.
Hello, George. Your timing is impeccable.
Yes.
Yes, it is. I'm Sharuna from Well Service.
Oh, hello.
And I'm making a documentary about Ken Loach and his new film.
All right.
And your name was just mentioned. Your ears must have been burning.
Amazing.
I'm not trying to get out of everyone's way.
Yes. Yeah, that's what we're doing here, really, yeah.
So have you been involved in this scene right now?
Yes, I've been, because it involves somebody playing music. Otherwise, in terms of the rest of the film, I'm not allowed even to see it until Jonathan says, and Ken say, yeah, you can come in and see it now. And then quite often I don't even read a script. I just turn up and see the film.
And how long do you have to compose the music?
Well, I normally get a weekend.
You usually sit around for 2 months and then he does it at the weekend.
No, I don't. I generally get a few weeks.
Six weeks.
It's quite a tricky process writing music for Ken's films, because he likes the music to be rooted in the reality of the film and that it's not used as a sort of artifice.
We're bound a little bit by social realism rules, so you shouldn't be aware of the camera, you shouldn't be aware of the editing, and you shouldn't be aware of the music.
Yeah.
There should be things that are there, of course they're there, but that you don't notice. So it sometimes
it's true. So you
makes it a little
flashy,
difficult.
Flashy editing.
No. That's why he's got me.
No, that's not why he's got you. But the note of bitterness. Yeah.
You're listening to the documentary In the Studio from the BBC World Service. I'm Sharuna Saga, and I've been following the progress of Ken Loach's last ever film, The Old Oak. It's now November, and I've been invited to the cutting room in central London to watch The Old Oak being edited.
Hello.
Hi, Ken.
Yes.
It's Sharuna. I'm
Sharuna.
Hello.
Come in. Ring the bell. Say you come to see two pensioners.
Okay, all right.
I go up to the editing suite where I find Ken and Jonathan examining some rushes.
How are you? You all right?
I'm really well. I'm really good.
Slightly. Can you hear me? Are you listening through there?
I'm recording all of this, so be careful what you say. Right.
I can't slag him off, you mean, in that case.
I see footage of a parade on the monitor and ask Ken what scene he's working on today.
It's the last few shots of the film, and it's the Durham Miners' Gala. The point is to capture the strength and energy and sense of optimism that you get from people gathered together in vast numbers, all committed to the same progressive ideas. So we're cutting like a documentary where you find little moments that just hang together and give an impression of the march, and it'll probably have the end roller over it.
The end roller is film speak for the closing credits, by the way. And what Ken and Jonathan are looking for are shots of a banner that they had made specially for that scene, one that's held aloft during the march.
We delay because it was another shot similar. Band walking towards us.
Good. I know what it is.
As they work, I notice how at ease they are in each other's company and how in tune they are with the overall vision.
Great minds, you see. It's not usually this efficient.
No. Well, we're making the effort, aren't we?
Yeah, I know.
When Ken nips out, I take the opportunity to talk to Jonathan about the editing process.
How many versions are there of the final film? How many cuts do you get through?
Well, I've got a sheet of paper here, and we can have a look, really. And we've got six at the moment. We're on cut six. Currently, the film is 115 minutes, 25 seconds. And 23 frames, to be precise. So we've come down by 36 minutes. It's 36 minutes shorter than the first cut.
So, do you disagree? What's he like? Ooh. What's he like in the cutting room?
Well, it's not my job to disagree, really. It's my job to put together the film that the director wants, whoever that director is. An editor can influence a director, perhaps better by not disagreeing, but just by chatting and working away at him.
Oh, Ken's coming back into the room.
Right. Stop talking about him.
It was all good things, Ken. Don't worry.
I can't believe it. You're just saying it.
And when Jonathan takes a break, I'm able to ask Ken about their relationship.
Jonathan is a key man, really. I can say it since he's not here to embarrass him, but we started working together in 1979, God help us. Jonathan does the work. I mean, we just sit and chat, and you know, I tune into the cricket from time to time and get the score. In fact, I haven't done it today. I need to know whether New Zealand are beating Pakistan. Again, like with everyone, you have to have a hinterland. You can't talk about the work every second of the day. There's a whole hinterland of other things you're interested in, like by osmosis, that spills into how you view what you're looking at on the screen. But again, the rhythm of cutting is the key thing. And that's should be like the human eye in the corner of the room. You look at something different when you hear a sound or when someone throws the ball of conversation over and that person is then expected to speak. You cut at the point the human eye would move. And it's to do with a kind of human rhythm. And the human rhythm of editing should echo the human sound you hear, the humanity of the shots you construct, and at essence, the story you're trying to tell.
Take a seat.
Oh, we haven't talked about the editor yet, have we?
Have you not?
No. Ask me again. Ask me about his shorts.
Now I have them both together, I want to know what happens next after they finish this final scene.
We'll look at what we've done, which is far too long now because I mean, we've assembled it all, and then work on it probably for another 10 days, week to 10 days, see what we've got really.
Well, it's lunchtime now, so I'll let you go and have your break, and I will see you next time.
Okay, see you next time.
The next time is the final stage of the creative process, the music, composed by George Fenton. I eavesdrop on the recording as Ken sits in the booth, listening intently and giving notes.
Because the cellos are good, because there's something quite ecclesiastical about them, isn't it?
Yes, exactly. It is very churchy. That sounds great, George. Sounds good,
Afterwards, I talked to George about working with Ken.
This is, I think, the 18th film I've done of his. I've never obviously worked for anybody as many times as I've worked for him.
And unlike anyone else that you work with as a director?
Unlike anybody else. If you write a score for a Hollywood film, then there's a lot of micromanaging of all the process in films. Ken does micromanage in many ways. I mean, he is very, very detailed in what he does. But the great thing about him is that if he responds well to something, you can rely on it.
It's something really awe-inspiring. And I think there's a hushed... So it's an intake of breath feeling for the audience. And 'cause they'll...
He's a good pair of ears. He's very musical. He's very, very quick to identify the one that is the old oak.
The length of the note itself. I mean, I may be wrong.
I mean, I think he's doing that deliberately.
Yes.
So...
But it sits in the silence more rather than it being continuous, if you know what I mean.
I mean, Ken doesn't like music for music's sake, and he doesn't need it as an extra character to tell you a scene is scary or it's time to laugh. So on this particular film, he didn't want a lot of music, did he?
He doesn't have a lot of music in his films. You know, there's gaps. Very often when I score a film, there's hardly any gaps. It's music from the beginning to the end. And in his films, because there are gaps, he's very sensitive, and I am too very sensitive when I'm working with him, about the precision of when the music starts and stops. In his films, the music stops when things hot up, you know, if there's an action sequence, because he likes the audience to feel the same experience of sound as the characters are experiencing.
Great stuff. Thank you.
Okay. We done it. Is that everything?
Yeah, I think he's played all the notes that he's had.
He's played all the notes.
Yeah, very good. And in the right
order.
The Old Oak was completed in April 2023, just in time to be nominated for the Palme d'Or at the prestigious Cannes Film Festival. That's the official premiere, but it's not the movie's first screening. That honour goes to an independent cinema in Newcastle-upon-Tyne, some 20 miles away from the film's central location. I'm in the back of a taxi and I'm on the way to the Tyneside Cinema. I'm actually very excited because I'm going to see the film along with the cast and crew. It's a special screening just for them so they can get a first look at the film before it goes to Cannes. On entering the cinema, I bump into some familiar faces, including Ken, Paul and Rebecca O'Brien, the producer.
Fancy meeting you here.
From my seat, I can see people I recognise from in front of and behind the camera, all with their eyes fixed to the screen. The film was hard-hitting and heartbreaking, but it also had some hope. Once the credits rolled, I approached the star of the film to get his immediate reaction.
Hello again.
There we go. Dave. So what was it like seeing yourself up there? You are now a proper actor.
No.
You are.
No, you've said this just before, and I'm not. No, I'm not. I got through because of Ken Loach and because of the people there.
But I've just seen you on the big screen now, and you are a proper actor.
Well, that's very, very kind of you, but I've seen proper actors and how they do it, and I couldn't do that. What I did was, it was different.
I'm also curious to know how the Hassoun sisters feel now they've watched the film.
Actually, good. But I have three scenes, important scenes, got in the film. I don't know why. But I feel not good, because I would like to see what I said.
It's difficult, Hasna.
It's difficult.
Yeah, yeah. But it's a good film, very important,
The most important thing, it's the main point of the film, actually. People will, understand our feeling as well, so...
Rebecca O'Brien's no stranger to these kind of responses. All Ken's films feature first-time actors, from Kez to I, Daniel Blake, so she knows what the cast are experiencing.
I think it's always difficult for people to see themselves on screen, and they get quite a shock, and I think, in a way, they almost don't see it properly until they see it again, because they're just looking out for themselves and seeing themselves. But people seem to really enjoy it, and they were very emotional, and... No, I'm delighted with the reaction. I really am.
The last word has to go to Ken, and I managed to grab a moment with him.
I know you're very busy.
Yeah, go on, Shirina,
I just want to know, how do you feel now you've had your first screening with the cast and crew?
Well, it's quite a strong emotional response, really. It's difficult because the people who created it, scene by scene, some have quite an emotional response, and which is understandable, and it's always complex because people are seeing themselves. I mean, my hope is that we just did them justice, because they're an extraordinary group of people, and the Syrians have such stories to tell, and you can only tell a fraction of that in the film.
Thank you so much, Ken. I'll let you get back to your cast and crew party.
Okay.
Thank you.
This private showing for the people who made the film is the most important one for Ken and his team, not least because at the ripe old age of 87, he's now facing the very real prospect that this is his last film.
I think there reaches a point when you have to accept the inevitable and hang up your wherever film directors hang up.
We've been here before. Is this going to be your last film?
Who knows? But I can't imagine another one at the moment.
You always say that, though, Ken.
Well, yeah, but there comes a time when Father Time takes its toll, you know.
And it looks as though that time has finally come. But The Old Oak, with its uncharacteristic optimism for a Loach film, feels like a fitting finale to Ken's extraordinary six decades at the coalface of British social realist cinema. You've been listening to the documentary In the Studio from the BBC World Service. The programme was produced by Stephen Hughes and me, Sharuna Sagar.
Was on the phone with her, working through contractions.
For CBC and the BBC World Service, The Con, Caitlin's baby.
Something was off.
There was somebody out there who's faking pregnancies.
There had been other victims scammed by the same person.
We don't want any other doulas to go through this.
The Con, Caitlin's baby, available now.